surrender to the flow of love that will heal me. I release control. Surrender to the flow of love that will heal me. I release control. Surrender to the flow of love that will heal me. I release control. Surrender to the flow of love that will heal me. I release control. Surrender to the flow of love that will heal me. I release control. Surrender to the flow of love that will be.
I invite you to just take a moment and open your eyes. And just take a moment to just look around the room, look at each other. You don't have to say anything, you don't have to do anything. Just take in the people that are here. You may want to lift your eyes and look out the windows and take in the beauty of the sky and the trees. Hold someone or something is to behold the sense of the divine and the sacred that's in them. So part of the day is directing our attention toward that. And just notice what happens as you take in each other. Now I invite you to go ahead and close your eyes. And as you do, just become aware of your breath, the in-breath and the out-breath. And this is a simple practice, a simple invitation to try. As you breathe in, can you receive the words, "I love you," from each other, from God, from nature, whatever your source of love is, can you take in, I love you? And then as you breathe out, can you offer, I love you, to those around you, to the room, to the world, to the community? Just to continue that practice for a few moments, breathing in the I love you from the spirit that's here, and breathing out, I love you, to others in the room here. As you take in love and offer out love, maybe being mindful, the love we connect with knows no limits, no bounds, no conditions. Everyone and everything is welcome, just as it is, just because it is. Continuing the practice for a few more breaths as we start to sing this chant again, just allowing your eyes to stay open or closed, whatever is most comfortable for you. Let's just all take a big breath in and let it out. Go ahead and do it again. Breathe in. And if you need to make a sound when you let it out, just go ahead. Whatever. Good. Wow. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for being willing to try out a new configuration like this. Just so you know, when it comes to change and control, I resist it as much as anybody does. In all my years of speaking, I've never done this before either. This is kind of a new thing for me. So if you're feeling a little like, what is this all about? Know that I'm right here with you. And having said that, I didn't just come up with this idea just, hey, let's try something new. You know, why not? Be new to be new. Because I don't like that. I don't like doing new things just for the sake of doing new things. But as I was thinking about today, it's the last Sunday of 2025. As I was thinking about the love that I have personally experienced from this church, from each of you, and this community known as Coeur d'Alene, I just got this image of a circle and a community. And even the fact that you're all looking at me, you know, kind of like this, I'm experiencing that love in a new way. And I just have to tell you, it's amazing. Just this whole week has been wonderful, from our solstice service that we had a couple weeks ago, to the Sunday service last week, to our Christmas Eve service, and then being able to celebrate Christmas Day. I had the most emotional Christmas Day that I've ever had in all my life. I've never cried so much, and I've never laughed so hard. And it's this idea, again, of opening to the unfolding of love. And as I was thinking about, you know, today is the last Sunday of 2025, and thinking of this community, I really sense that something new is wanting to unfold here. I have absolutely no idea what that is or what that looks like. And a lot of you, you know, as I've talked to you, think, oh, wow, is there a vision for numerical growth and a bigger building and bigger crowds and all that kind of stuff, you know? And I can get into that, but I need you to hear me say, I also left that. My former church world that I came from was all about growth, 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 get people in the chairs. And the reason I left all that is because so much of it seemed manipulative. And people became objects to target, or objects to love on. You know, oh, we're just going to love on you, you know, and kind of feign this love, you know, in the hopes that you come over to our side of the tracks. And the things that we would offer or something like that would have this sort of covert underlying thing of, hey, come and join us. And it felt so artificial and so fake, you know, to me that I left that. And the reason I'm drawn here, and, you know, from the first Sunday that I came here, was this idea of living love and uplifting lives. I love that. I love every single bit of that. You know, and how do we do that here? Simple. We just bring people together. We do different gatherings, classes, clubs, groups, outreaches, you know, all kinds of things. But it's just bringing people together. And I think if it's going to be loving, that means we all just release attachment to outcome of what it looks like, you know, and trust that love will unfold and what makes this will make this community what it's meant to be. As I was thinking about unfolding, I also got this image of childbirth. Now, who's a man to talk about childbirth? I don't have the foggiest idea what childbirth is like or what it's gone through, because I've never experienced it. But there's passages in the Bible and elsewhere that talk about the unfolding of love as like birth pangs, you know, and that sometimes before something new wants to emerge, there's going to be something extremely painful. And if you've given birth to children, you know intensely what that's like. But I just want to read this poem from John O'Donohue to kind of set the stage as we talk about what we're going to be talking about here today. This is his poem, For a New Beginning. In out-of-the-way places of the heart, where your thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until you were ready to emerge. For a long time, it has watched your desire, feeling the emptiness growing inside you, noticing how you willed yourself on, still unable to leave what you had outgrown. It watched you play with the seduction of safety and the gray promises that sameness whispered, heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent, wondered, would you always live like this? Then the delight, when your courage kindled, and out you stepped onto new ground, your eyes young again with energy and dream, a path of plenitude opening before you. Though your destination is not yet clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. Unfurl yourself into the grace of beginning, that is at one with your life's desire. Awaken your spirit to adventure. Hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in risk. Soon you will be home in a new rhythm, for your soul senses that the world awaits you. Let that soak in. For your soul senses that the world awaits you. If you were here Christmas Eve, we asked the question, what vow is your soul waiting for you to make? And what sacrifices are you willing to make to keep that vow? These are very personal questions that may even be like, I'm not so sure about this myself. But isn't it fascinating to think that you and I are here for such a time as this to do something so amazing and so spectacular and so mind-blowing, you know? And here's the idea. Our hearts and our souls know this. Our mind can come up with a bazillion reasons why it won't work. And we love our minds around here, but that's just kind of how the mind works. But what we talk about here in this tradition in Science of Mind is the harmony of the heart and the mind and understanding how the two function. So to be able to dream, to be able to hope, to be able to think about it, to me is really exciting. I'm going to offer some slides, mindful that especially this half of the room might have to do some neck cricking. Don't feel obligated to do that at all, but just so you can see here, when we think of love as a portal to healing, okay, just to kind of put this in the context of where we've been talking about Advent, which is the experience of watching, waiting, and listening. Last week, we celebrated Christmas, which is about the incarnation of not just a person, Jesus, but it's about the incarnation and the awakening of love. And the mystical part of the story, it's the always coming, the always being birthed experience of love. We don't think of Christmas as just an event that happened 2,000 years ago. We think of an event that has ongoing implications. And this is where language can be a little limiting. In the Greek, there's a verb tense known as aorist. Any Greek people here study Greek? Probably not, okay? But in the Greek, there's a verb tense that's known as the aorist tense. And what the aorist tense is it talks about a single punctiliar action in the past with ongoing implication in the future. We don't have a tense like that in English. We can only try to explain it, but the Greeks understood it. So this idea of love and awakening to love is this idea of always in the process of being made loving. And then, so that's what Christmas is all about. We're coming up to, after the 12 days of Christmas in the calendar, the season of Epiphany. Epiphany are moments of awakening and meaning-making. Okay, so can you see sort of what's happening here? We're watching and waiting for the always arriving birth of love, and along the way we have moments of awakening. The thing, have any of you ever experienced epiphanies before? Yeah. Did you ever wake up that morning and think, I'm going to have an epiphany today? No. For how many of you did those epiphanies come by surprise? Yeah. For me, sometimes they happen in the shower, out on a walk, driving the car, asleep at night. It doesn't matter how it happens. The common through line is that it comes by surprise. And this is where, what we've been singing about prior to meditation, I release control and surrender to the flow of love that will heal me. It's being open to the mystery and the surprise of love. So, in the Tao Te Ching, it says the path that can be followed is not the spiritual path. I love that. it's a mystery. It's a mystery. And so as we think about how love is unfolding in our lives individually, how is love unfolding in our lives as a community, and how is love a spiritual community, and how is love unfolding in this greater community in our world, can we be open to that mystery? All right, so the invitation and intention today, we're talking about finding love and forgiveness, and you're thinking, is he ever going to start talking about it? Yes, I will. But the invitation and intention for not just today, but as we close out this year and open up to a new year is this, and it's inspired by the Great Commandment. May we love the sacred with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and may we love our neighbor as ourselves. Jesus was asked, what's the great commandment, the greatest commandment? And he said, love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And people might hear that and say, but how can I love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength? I don't know my heart. I don't know everything that's within me. That's where I think Jesus might have tacked on that last part. Love your neighbor as yourself. When we participate, when we engage with loving our neighbor as ourself, we learn things about ourselves. Would you agree with that? Have you experienced learning things about yourself as you've loved other people, as you've tried to engage other people? Particularly those shadowy parts of ourselves, you know, that everybody else sees, but we don't. And when those parts get exposed, you know, I don't like it. It's uncomfortable, you know, whatever, okay? But that's how it works. There's a dynamism in how we love the sacred and how we love each other. And it involves just living with an open and a willing heart. So what if, and this is all thinking about forgiveness here, we've talked about this before, heaven is not only a place to die and go to, but a place to awaken and live from. In the book of Matthew chapter 16, Jesus asked his followers, you know, who do you say that I am? And some people said, oh, maybe you're Elijah, you know, maybe you're Jonah, maybe you're Abraham, you know, whatever, you know. And then Peter, St. Peter, I so am thankful for St. Peter because I'm not St. Peter, but I act a lot like him. You know, he goes, oh, whoa, 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 teacher, I know, you know. Yes, Peter, you are the Christ, the Son of God, sent from heaven, you know. And Jesus says to him, yes, Simon Peter, flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And he changes his name. His name was Simon up until this time, and he does a little play with names. Now you're going to be Peter, Petra. And on this rock, Peter, Petra, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall never prevail against it. That's a verse that Catholics use to explain how Jesus makes Peter the first pope. See that? Okay. The interesting thing about that is, and I don't know that Catholics do this, but I mean, immediately after that scene, Jesus goes on to explain what following his way will look like. A pathway of hardship, a pathway of suffering, a pathway of sacrifice. And Peter says, absolutely not. This isn't going to happen. Okay? They, like many of us, were looking for a king. They were looking for a guru. They were looking for a leader who was going to transcend hardship. And Peter said, no, I'm not going to have anything to do with it. Jesus comes back and says to him, get behind me, Satan, for you don't know the things of God. Can you imagine saying that to a pope? Get behind me, Satan. No, not at all. But then he goes on to say, Peter, as I build my church, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. So to think about this in the context of forgiveness, at the heart and soul of the practice of forgiveness is this experience of binding and loosing. And you may just spend a moment thinking about your life as this year comes to a close. You know, are there people? Are there situations? Are there circumstances that I'm holding on to that are binding me in place, that are holding me back? And are there things that life is inviting me to loosen and let go of? Can you hold that? Can you examine that non-judgmentally? Because by binding, I don't mean to imply that binding is bad. You know, we all need things to hold on to. And I'm not trying to insinuate that letting go is always good. But the idea is to notice, what am I holding on to and what am I loosening? For example, this imagery of binding and loosing is in, I'm going to come back to that in just a minute. hold that thought. Okay. What if forgiveness is more than an event, but a spiritual practice? More than an event and a spiritual practice. That same Peter, in another scene, went up to Jesus and said, "Good teacher, how many times do I have to forgive that person in my life? Seven times?" And in the Jewish tradition that they were all living in, seven was kind of a magic number. And Jesus says to him, "No, not seven times, but 70 times seven." Now, do you think Jesus was making this a math problem? You know, 490 times is okay, but if you do this for a 491st time, no, you're done. No, of course not. I think Jesus knew something, like many other spiritual teachers have known as well. The mind can very much construct forgive and forget. In our minds, that makes us up. But my sense is the heart doesn't get that. The heart doesn't understand what it means to let go. And so maybe the experience of forgiveness is not just forgive and forget, but remember and forgive. What would shift in your life if you shifted your thought of forgiveness as forgetting, but remembering and forgiving? One of the things I really appreciate about AA is they talk a lot about making amends in people's lives, but before you do that, you go through the experience of making what is called a fearless moral inventory of your life that you unpack with a sponsor, a mentor, you know, a friend or whatever. And the whole purpose of that is to do an inventory to go, you know, what's my intention here in making amends? Oftentimes, our experience of forgiveness, if we're not mindful, if we're not thoughtful or intentional, can be more about me not wanting to feel bad than about being free, freeing myself of the bind of whatever happened or the bondage of whatever happened to the other person. And again, I would say to you that based on this teaching, the experience of forgiveness is more of a practice than an event. Some of you here may be thinking about something that's happened in your life, and you, if you were honest, you think, I can't let go of that. I can't forget it. I can't not do it. And my invitation here is, can you have compassion for that side of yourself? And maybe for you, letting go and releasing control can be letting go of letting go. Think about that for a minute. What would shift if you let go of letting go? I don't know. But I think this really can go a long way in helping us understand forgiveness. What I'd like to do in the time that remains is offer you what I call the three E's of forgiveness. The three E's of forgiveness. And I'm going to look at my notes here to make sure I get them right. It's the expression, the experience, and the effect. The expression of forgiveness, the experience of forgiveness, and the effect of forgiveness. All right? The first one, the expression of forgiveness is one of trust and surrender. Take a minute and look around the room. What do you see? Anyway, just, what is it?
Loved ones.
Loved ones. Mm-hmm. What else do you see?
Tolerance.
What's that?
More of ourselves.
More of ourselves? I love that. Isn't that nice? To see more of each other? Yeah. Yeah. What else do you see?
Tolerance.
Tolerance? Uh-huh. What else?
Souls.
Souls? Yeah. Oh my gosh,
Yes, a lot of work that people put into making this happen. I've been here 4 months, and my whole posture and intention of these first few months being here is to watch, listen, and learn. And so as I watch, listen, and learn people's stories, I realize there are people here who have invested a lot of time and a lot of money into building this building and making this all happen. Wow. Yeah. What else do you see?
Curiosity?
Uh-huh.
A different way.
A what?
I see them from a different way. I just recognize them from the back of their heads before. Now I can see their faces.
Good. Thank you. Part of the experience of today was to just play with discomfort. And again, to not judge it, to not evaluate it as good or bad or right as wrong, but just to notice what is it like to be looking in somebody else's face instead of the speaker the whole time. Okay, and like I told you, this is very new for me because I'm getting all this in 360 myself, and it's like, oh, I hope my backside is as clean as my front side is, you know. So I'm doing that. But I just again invite you to notice. Yeah, exactly. Part of the experience of the trust and surrender in forgiveness is meaning making. Making new meaning of something. For example, if you would say, I am anxious, how do you know that you're anxious? I mean, how do you really know? An invitation would be to drop into your body. Well, how do I feel in my body? There may be tension, there may be shakes, there may be, you know, any number of physical things. Where the meaning comes in is the story that the mind makes about it. That's where it becomes a feeling. Okay, an emotion, as I understand it, and there are many, but my understanding is emotion is a felt experience in the body. Meaning, or a feeling, is the story that the mind attaches to that experience. So this is why we can say anxiety and excitement are very close cousins. Because what's the story that I'm tying to my felt experience? And so, you know, again, for many of you, you know, being here, there could be like, oh, I don't know, this feels weird, you know. What if maybe looking at each other is also kind of exciting? And this is why I invite people when something is a...
Sometimes the hardest part is forgiving ourselves.
Oh, you're getting ahead of me, but yes. Maybe my messages can be shorter because you already know where I'm going with this. But you're exactly right, and I'll get to that in just a minute, okay? So yes, whether it's fearful anxiety, how about depression? You know, any of you here experience depression? How do you know you're depressed? Is it a felt experience in your body? That's a very nice phone ring. Thank you. I'm liking how my messages are evoking responses from people's phones these days. Yes. Christmas Eve, we had an interesting thing happen, too. It was fun. Okay. You know, but back to depression, all right? Okay. The invitation is to go into your body, notice what's going on, and then can you be aware of the story that your mind is making about that depression? And could it be that maybe the depression that you're experiencing is a body's invitation to peace and stillness and darkness? Something that, you know, a practice I'd invite you to do in this new year is to create space for solitude and silence. Solitude is an experience. Loneliness is meaning. How is it to be by yourself? How is it to be quiet? I'll tell you this, and I'm not saying this to sound pious, even though it might sound pious. For the last 3 months, all of my social media has been deactivated. If you look for me on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, anywhere, you won't find me because I've deactivated it all. I wish I could tell you I did that because of a spiritual practice, but there's some stuff going on in my life where I was advised to do that. But I have to tell you, one of the epiphanies and one of the surprises I've had is how freeing it is. I gotta tell you, it is so freeing. And so maybe for some of you, take a day off of Facebook. Take a week. Can you go a day without your cell phone? I don't know. I heard somebody, Simon Sinek, said if the first thing you do when you wake up is reaching for your phone instead of your loved one, you might have a problem. I don't know. He said it, not me, all right? But this idea gets, go back to the idea of binding and loosing. What you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. What you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. These are energies. It's been said that the real test of Christianity isn't loving Jesus, it's loving Judas. If you're familiar with the Christian story, Judas is the one who betrayed Jesus. And this is, again, to look at the story not as a fact check, but as a myth. Because in one version, the story says that Judas went out and hung himself. Another version of the story is that Judas went out into a field and his bowels spilled out all over the place. The point of the story are not the facts about his death, but about the fact that it was a very painful, tragic death. The mythical invitation, though, into all of that is, can you forgive the inner betrayer? The way that you've betrayed yourself? The way that maybe you've betrayed love? Can you love that part of yourself? Have you ever been around people that are judgmental? Have you ever been judgmental yourself? Okay? I am learning. This is something that I'm learning. I don't have it mastered yet. But I am learning that when I judge something else, it's usually a projection of some part of myself that I'm judging. So when I look at someone and I say they're a narcissist, when I look at someone and say they're insensitive, when I look at someone and say they're full of you know what, oftentimes there's something inside of me that I'm judging the same way. And so the invitation to forgive may start with learning how to forgive yourself. And forgiving yourself is not eradicating or erasing those parts of yourself that you don't like, but looking at them with love and compassion, the same love and compassion that you'd show other people. My friends, I get choked up when I see this, but if we can start to get that, imagine the healing that can happen in this community. I mean, I love this community. I love this church precisely because of who's here and where it is. We're in North Idaho. We're in this beautiful sanctuary. And the political currents, the religious occurrence, and the polarities are as strong as they've ever been. Let me tell you this, and I want to talk about polarity that exists in this community. This goes back to what I was mentioning earlier about binding and loosing. The Jesus practice of binding and loosing was an invitation and an earmark of ways that Jesus was a shaman. Have you ever heard Jesus and shaman used in the same sentence? I have a message in my hip pocket sometime down the road to show you the shamanic work that Jesus did. Why do I tell you that? Because I know in this community, some of this can be a polarizing thing. And just in my own experience, I do a lot of shamanic work. I've been the recipient of a lot of shamanic work. I've been around a lot of shamanic people. There's one shaman that I respect and learn from in my life. His name is Armand Bitton. He's down in California. And I respect him because he integrates and makes it all about love. Many people spiritually, in the shamanic world, are what I call ABC spiritualists. That means anything but Christian. They've got like a Jesus allergy, you know, and we'll take everything in, but don't talk to me about Jesus, okay? There are people who come from a Christian background who I call ABS spiritualists, okay? Anything but shamanism, because they see shamanism as juxtaposed to what Jesus did. You've got to know, in Jesus' day, they cast lots. They talked to spirits. They did practices and things that were there. If they had tarot cards, they probably did those, all right? Why is that important? Because as I've watched and I've just gotten to know people here, I know that there has been, as things have been done here, judgments made about people who practice and say certain things. And there's been a resistance to that. One of the things I love to do as a minister is help people deal with their Jesus allergy, okay, and also deal with their shamanic allergy, because I live in both of those worlds. Now, it's not like that. Not that I'm the expert, but in our tradition here, New Thought tradition. Okay, New Thought has its beginnings in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, when thinkers in Europe were starting to integrate the teaching of Sigmund Freud, the psychologist, with Christian thought and Eastern philosophy. That thinking made its way over into the United States. People like Mary Baker Eddy, people like Emma Curtis Hopkins, and then later people like Ernest Holmes and Charles and Merle Fillmore started writing about this stuff. Now, if you read all of those authors, they quote from the Bible liberally. Liberally. What's happened as this movement has evolved is it's split into Centers for Spiritual Living and Unity. And one of the main things of splitting was how Christian it is. Can you believe that? Yeah. And I've had people here in this community, I've gotten to know them, say, oh, we love it when you don't talk about Jesus so much. Talk about other people. Quote Rumi and all this kind of stuff. You know? And I've had other people say, oh, James, we love it when you talk about Jesus in the Bible. Okay, I hope we can do all of it. Here's why. Our name is Unity. Unity does not mean uniformity. There's a difference. People would ask, well, is this a Christian congregation? I would say, no, it's not a Christian congregation. It's a spiritual congregation that includes some people who would identify themselves as Christian. Be mindful, Jesus never used that word. Humans invented that word years after. The earliest followers of Jesus were people of the way who had what I call supper clubs. They got together over supper, they shared a meal, and talked about spiritual things, much like a lot of the groups here do. Okay, but it was very decentralized, and well, I won't get down that path. But anyway, okay, as we think about forgiveness and healing this and leaving the past become, I know that this church is here because it's been the merger of a couple of churches and people here from all over the neighborhood. And I'm curious about the past, but what I want to do is invite us to be able to lean into the past, lean into who we are, lean into the beginning of our movement as New Thought, and can we really live the mystery of it? The same mystery that prompted people like the Fillmores, Ernest Holmes, Mary Baker Eddy, Emma Curtis Hopkins to write the stuff that we did. Can we start to write our own story? Draw from theirs, but don't seek to preserve it or defend it or you know, whatever, you know, but to live into that and be that expression of love today. All of that involves this expression of trust and surrender. That's the expression. The experience of forgiveness is eternal. And by eternal, I mean timeless. We live on a human time scale, seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, years, etc., etc., etc. Forgiveness in the divine time scale is not limited to that. What that means is things can happen in the snap of a finger. Sometimes things can happen in a non-linear fashion, meaning you can have the experience of something now and then go back and see what it was all about. Non-linearity, I mean, Einstein proved all this stuff was relative and all that, so science backs it up. But the idea is, again, sometimes the experience of forgiveness in this lifetime may not feel complete. And can that be okay for you and for me? It's ongoing, and it's a practice. Lastly, the effect of forgiveness is a shift from the love of power to the power of love. A couple of practical tools that can help you do that. As you're navigating forgiveness with yourself and with others, can you make a distinction between impact and intention? Oftentimes in conversations, somebody will say something, and then the person will reflect back what's going on. And what do we do? Oh, I didn't mean it that way. I didn't mean it that way. I didn't mean it that way. The invitation here is to stop, slow down, and can you, as a receiver of something, own the impact that it's having on you? Can you, as a giver, acknowledge and validate that? That may not have been your intention, but can you validate that experience? Okay? What happens if we don't validate the impact of something, again, we project it some subconsciously onto someone or something else. I see this happen in political conversations all the time. And this is where Facebook and social media and Twitter and all that stuff is so toxic. Because we don't, you know, what happens politically is our problems are amplified and our solutions are simplified. And we don't see them that way, okay? And because there's not an ownership of the impact that something happened, it gets projected onto the other side. You know, Democrats are always this. Republicans are always that. If we could just get past all of that, you know what? We want the same thing. We're just coming at it from different angles. And if we can hold both of those angles, oh my gosh, it's powerful. Okay? So, differentiate between impact and intent. Secondly, own your intention, but release attachment to outcome. That's that control thing. Okay? So, have your intention be love. Have your intention be restoration. But then can you release attachment to outcome? This brings it all back to love. Because at the end of the day, all that we can control is our own experience and our own expression and our own offering of love. It gets hard when you offer love and it's not taken. And I could talk a lot about this as someone who left a church, lost relationship with all three of my kids and 4,000 people in my former community, you know, and it's just, I just want to love you guys. I want to love you guys. Nope. You know, so again, it's not woe is me or whatever, but the work or the practice is coming and realizing, wait a minute, the love that I have for other people is mine. And there's nothing in all of creation that can take that away. Okay? As we practice forgiving others and letting go of others or other things or whatever, just be mindful of the fact that we can't control somebody else's outcome. And we can acknowledge how hurtful it is when you offer forgiveness and you offer something loving and nope, it's not taken. I don't know of anything more painful for that. But can you use that pain as a portal back to a greater sense of compassion and love for you? I want to just... you familiar with this book, The Book of Awakening? Any of you ever read it? Yeah. Awesome. Highly recommend it. Lisa introduces it to me, and I just want to read today's to you as we wrap this up here. December 28th is about integrity. Integrity is the ability to listen to a place inside oneself that doesn't change, even though the life that carries it may change. Much of our journey throughout this book has been discovering that place inside and cultivating the ability to listen to it while having compassion for the life that carries it. It moves me to share the story of a troubled man who, exhausted from his suffering and confusion, asked a sage for help. The sage looked deeply into the troubled man and with compassion offered him a choice. You may either have a map or a boat. What would you rather have, a map or a boat? After looking at the many pilgrims about him, all of whom seemed equally troubled, the confused man said, I'll take the boat. The sage kissed him on the forehead and said, Go then. You are the boat. Life is the sea. As we have discovered so many times, we have everything we need within us. The ability to listen inside is our oldest oar. You are the boat. Let's be those boats in the sea of love as it's unfolding here and out in our community in the new year. Amen? Amen. Amen. And so it is.
just where we go. And help us to be wise in times when we don't know. Let this be our prayer when we lose our way. Lead us to a place, guide us with your grace to a place where we'll be safe. I pray we'll find your light.
Nel cuore resterà.
And hold it in our hearts.
A ricordarci che.
When stars go out each night.
La terna stella sei. Nella mia preghiera.
Let this be our prayer.
Quanta fede c'è.
Quanta fede c'è.
Lead us to a place.
Guide us with your grace.
Give us faith so we'll be. Sogniamo un mondo senza più violenza, un mondo di giustizia e di speranza, ognuno di che ci dai.
We ask that life be kind.
Il desiderio che.
And watch us with your love.
Ognuno trovi amore.
We hope it so will have.
Intorno a te. Thank you.